Welcome to the award-winning Beverage Chronicles, the show where beer, wine, spirits, and everything in between get the spotlight. You'll hear the stories, meet the people, and discover the pours behind your favorite drinks. Here's your host, Gary Monteroso.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Beverage Chronicles. I'm your host, Gary Monteroso. Glad you could join us again this week. This is the show where we report on beverages of pretty much all types. Beer, wine, cocktails. Even once in a while we get into things like sodas, coffee, tea, bottled water. If you can drink it, we'll try to report on it. We have a lot to pass on to you today, including the introduction of a new regular contributor. But first, people say beers are for drinking, not for reviewing. You know, you hear that line all the time. Bars, breweries, beer events, often said with a grin. But there's a real point behind it. Because in today's craft beer world, almost every pour gets rated, ranked, checked in, and judged online. What used to be a simple decision, what do I want to drink tonight, has become a numbers game. And that raises a fair question. Are craft beer ratings helping us discover great beer, or are they quietly taking some of the fun out of it? Now, on one hand, there's no denying the value of beer reviews. The craft beer universe is huge. There are thousands of breweries, countless styles, and new releases hitting the market every week. For a newcomer, that can feel overwhelming. Ratings can act like a compass. They can point you toward a style you've never tried, a brewery you've never heard of, or beer that might otherwise have gone unnoticed. And sometimes, that's exactly what happens. You read a glowing review, you pick up the beer, and it becomes a favorite. And maybe it introduces you to a style like a sour ale or a hazy IPA that you might have avoided before. In that sense, ratings do something useful. They create curiosity, they educate drinkers, and they help connect people to beers they might never have discovered on their own. They also give drinkers a way to talk about what they're tasting. A detailed review can describe aroma, mouthfeel, balance, carbonation, bitterness, sweetness, and all those little elements that make one beer stand apart from another. That kind of language can deepen appreciation. It can turn a casual drinker into someone who starts paying closer attention to what's in the glass. And for breweries, especially those smaller ones, a strong rating can matter. A single positive review can boost visibility, create buzz, and send new customers searching for a beer they've never seen before. In a crowded market, that kind of exposure can be powerful. But there's another side to this. Beer ratings are opinions, not facts, not rules, not universal truth. That's where the trouble starts. We've all had the experience of loving a beer that the online crowd trashed, or being disappointed by something that everyone else seemed to rave about. That disconnect is not a flaw in the beer necessarily. It's a reminder that taste is personal. What one person calls world class, another person might find undrinkable. And when reviews get treated like gospel, we start losing the freedom to trust our own palates. And there's the issue of bias. Online ratings can create a kind of echo chamber. If a beer gets early praise, later reviewers may be influenced by that momentum. If it gets a few harsh reviews, that negative energy can stick, even if the beer is actually solid. Over time, those scores can become more powerful than the beer itself, and that can change how people drink. Instead of exploring freely, some drinkers start chasing the highest rated beers and avoiding anything below a certain number. The result is a more cautious, less adventurous beer culture, and that's a shame, because craft beer was built on experimentation, creativity, and risk-taking. It can also put pressure on breweries to play it safe. If every beer is being judged publicly and judged permanently, then some brewers may feel pushed to make what scores well instead of what expresses their vision. That can flatten the very thing that makes craft beer exciting in the first place. And let's be honest, not every beer is meant to be reviewed in a vacuum. Context matters. Was it fresh? Was it served properly? Was it the right style for the person reviewing it? Was the reviewer even in the mood for that beer? Those details matter more than a lot of people care to admit. And that's why ratings can be useful, but only if we use them the right way. They should be a guide, not a verdict. A suggestion, not a sentence. The best beer you drink this year may not be the one with the highest score. It may be the one you found by accident, the one you shared with friends, the one that hit you at exactly the right moment, the one that never went viral, never got hyped, and never needed a number to prove its worth. Maybe that's the real answer here. Beer ratings aren't ruining the experience by themselves, but over-reliance on them can. If we let scores replace curiosity, we lose something important. If we use them wisely, though, they can be part of the journey, not the whole journey. So maybe the next time you're looking for a beer, ask yourself, are you choosing it because of the number or because it actually speaks to you? Because in the end, beer is meant to be experienced, not just evaluated. At the top of the show, I mentioned that we are going to be introducing a new contributor to Beverage Chronicles, and that's going to take place right now. This fellow's name is Josh Seberg. He is a beverage director, consultant, and bottle shop opener based in Norfolk, Virginia. Over the last 15 years, he's worked in and around bars. He's created bar programs ranging from 40-seat restaurants to multi-outlet hotels. Over the last several years, he's been working on technical applications to make cocktails better and easier, including developing clarified milk punch trainings for such institutes as Campari America and Portland Cocktail Week. He is a certified spirits specialist, executive bourbon steward, and a diploma in single malt whiskey from the EWA. And let's introduce Josh with his first segment.
For Beverage Chronicles, this is Josh Seberg. There's a common piece of parlance when training bartenders. If it's opaque, you shake. This guidance ensures that drinks that contain citrus, like daiquiris or margaritas, get properly aerated and deliver the refreshing texture that makes them great. But what if I told you there's a citrus cocktail that demands to be stirred? Invented in 19th century Burma, the Pegu Club combines gin, orange liqueur, bitters, and lime juice. On its face, it looks like a cross between a gimlet and a margarita, but at its best, it may be closer to a martini. 2 ounces of London Dry Gin, 3/4 of an ounce of orange curacao, a couple of dashes of Angostura bitters, and a mere bar spoon of lime juice stirred together become a complex, uplifting, and delicious tipple. This template lends itself well to creativity, replacing the gin with tequila or rum, changing the orange liqueur for yellow chartreuse, getting you closer to Alaska territory, or even modifying the small amount of citrus can have a big impact on the end result. So the next time you're craving a cocktail, consider the Pegu Club. And after your first sip, consider a second one. For more of our work, check us out at Model Citizen Cocktails. For Beverage Chronicles, I'm Josh Seberg. Cheers.
What is up, everybody? Rachel here, aka Brews with Beerkowski, and I'm here to talk to you today about some beer history. I'm a certified Cicerone, and I'm a historian, and today we're going to be talking about why beer glassware matters more than you think. So, let's get nerdy. When you crack open a beer, do you drink straight from the can or the bottle? No judgment if you do, but you're probably missing out on half of the beer experience. Because beer glassware isn't just about presentation, it's about unlocking flavor, aroma, and texture in a way that completely transforms what's in your glass. So let's start with the basics. Beer is a sensory experience, right? What you taste is heavily influenced by what you smell. In fact, a huge portion of flavor perception comes from aroma, those volatile compounds released from the beer as it warms and interacts with the air. When you drink straight from a can or bottle, those aromas get trapped, and you're essentially muting the beer. Pour it into a glass, though, and that changes everything. You create head, that foamy layer on top of the beer, and that foam isn't just for looks. It acts like a lid, trapping aroma compounds and slowly releasing them as you drink. It also enhances mouthfeel and helps regulate how the carbonation hits your palate. Now, not all glasses are created equal. Different shapes are designed to highlight different aspects of beer. Take a Pilsner glass. It's tall and slender. It showcases clarity, maintains carbonation, and emphasizes crispiness. It's perfect for lagers. A tulip glass with its rounded bowl and flared lip captures aroma and directs it towards your nose. It's ideal for Belgian ales like saisons or anything that's very yeast expressive. A nonic pint is the classic pub glass, and it's durable and versatile. It's great for everyday drinking, though not always optimized for aroma. And then there are more specialized glasses. A Weizen glass is tall with room for a big fluffy head, perfect for wheat beers and their high carbonation with excessive yeast character. A snifter, which is often associated with brandy, works beautifully for strong ales and stouts, concentrating on aroma and encouraging slow sipping. And even nitro beers, like stouts, benefit from specific glassware designed to support that cascading effect and creamy head. And here's something a lot of people don't realize. Glassware also affects temperature and carbonation release. A wider bowl allows for the beer to warm slightly and opening up flavors. The shape of the rim controls how the beer hits your tongue, impacting how you perceive sweetness, bitterness, and acidity. And so, why does any of this matter? Because brewers design beer with all of this in mind. The aroma, the carbonation, the head retention, it's all intentional. And the right glass allows you to experience the beer in a way that was meant to be enjoyed. It doesn't have to be complicated. You don't need a cabinet full of specialty glassware. But even a simple, clean pint glass is a huge upgrade from drinking straight out of the can. So the next time you open up a beer, take that extra step. Pour it into a glass. Watch the foam rise and take a moment to smell it before you sip it. Great beer isn't just something that you drink. It's something that you experience.
Thanks to Josh Seberg and to Rachel Binkowski for their reports. Do you remember the first time you tasted a perfectly ripe tomato with a sprinkle of salt, or the disappointment of a French fry that wasn't seasoned? Well, salt has always been the quiet transformer in the kitchen, and now bartenders are finally giving it the same respect behind the bar. Across the globe, mixologists are using salt to sharpen flavors, soften bitterness, and bring cocktails to life. Sure, the salted rim has been around forever, especially on margaritas, but today's bartenders are pushing it even further. At Wynn Las Vegas, master mixologist Mariana Mercer-Borini builds flavored salts with cilantro, basil, chili, and lemon. At Sartiano's, they're dusting dirty martinis with truffle salt for savory aromatic lift. But the real revolution is happening inside the glass. Bartenders are turning to saline solution, a simple mixture of salt and water, to fine-tune cocktails with precision. Ivy Mix of Brooklyn's Whoopsie Daisy says she puts saline in almost everything she makes. It brightens citrus drinks, deepens sweet ones, smooths out mouthfeel, and even tames a bitter Negroni. As she puts it, there are very few drinks that don't do better with salt. The trend has grown so much that spirits brands are building salinity right into their bottles. Fisher's Gin uses coastal botanicals for a natural sea salt touch, while Maine's Bold Coast Spirits infuses vodka with oyster shells to add minerality and texture, the kind that makes a martini go from good to unforgettable. Salt isn't about making a drink taste salty. It's about making it taste complete, a quiet, transformative force. So the next time your pina colada feels flat or your martini doesn't quite pop, add a dash of saline. Just one part salt to four parts hot water. Let it cool. Taste as you go. Sometimes that tiny pinch is all it takes to make a home cocktail taste bar worthy. And that is it for this week's episode of Beverage Chronicles. I'm Gary Monteroso. Thanks for joining us. We will be right back here next week.